Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing well, Graham.
Great. That did not sound unnatural at all. We have to change how we start these.
Yeah, we could have. If we'd done some advanced planning, one of us could have done the David voice, and the other one could have done the
Walter.
Let's start this again.
I'll be David, and you be Walter, okay? And I'll call you Matt, and you call me Grant.
Okay.
All right, this is going to be really worth how much time it's taking, I promise.
All right.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Hello, Matt.
Hello, Graham.
Nailed it. That couldn't have been any better / worse than it was.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Alien Covenant. I know we're a little late to this. This movie was released May 19th, almost a month ago. From when we're taping this, and up to this point, domestically, it has earned $71.2 million. That's against a reported production budget of $97 million, an untold amount of marketing and promotion. But worldwide, it's done $178.7 million, so not bad against its budget, but definitely a disappointment for the U.S., don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and honestly, I don't know if that 178 is going to necessarily get it over. It'd be close in terms of what they spent on it when you put marketing in and everything. And for a franchise that is this storied and I would think this valuable, you would expect it to do better, and I'm sure the studio expected it to do better too. But one of the things we can probably get into talking about this, Graham, is that this franchise has been – all over the place. I mean, it's hard to really know what the value of it is and how people think of it, because it's gone from being a prestige franchise that some of the greatest directors of our time have worked in to being at some points kind of a trashy B-movie, almost direct-to-DVD level franchise. And I do wonder if that's kind of burned people out, or if it's maybe just diminished the way people view it over the years.
Well, you're referring to Alien versus Predator and how it was incorporated into that series?
Sure. I do definitely wonder if that contributes to people being burned out on it, and or at least just thinking of this franchise as kind of not something that's worth their time.
I don't think so, personally. For me, anyway, as a fan, Alien vs. Predator didn't diminish the franchise at all, in my opinion. I think that, you know, when you see that Alien name, it recalls the greatness of Alien and Aliens, and to some degree, Alien 3, even though most people, we'll talk about this, even though most people would like to consider that not a part of the Alien canon. For me, those movies didn't do that, and I think that it still has prestige. And what makes this movie special is that you have Ridley Scott, the guy that started it all, returning as the director. And correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm not talking about Prometheus, but the first time he has returned to this franchise in an official capacity, because as far as I know, he was not a producer on any of the other Alien films.
No, I don't think he had anything to do with those, and it does seem kind of... It's interesting how he's gotten back into it, because there was a period of time after Prometheus where it looked like he was done with it again and he was walking away, and there were other people coming to the table wanting to take the franchise in a new direction. And he kind of jumped back in and said, no, you know what? I'm not going to allow any of those things, and I'm going to keep it going in my direction that I want it to go. And I definitely was a little burned by that, because I thought some of the other things being talked about were more interesting. And so that was kind of how I came into this movie. And I have to say, maybe because of that, I was pleasantly surprised. I think this was a step up from Prometheus, and I still think there are issues with it. I don't think it's on the level of the first two alien movies, but I do think he's doing some interesting things with the franchise now, and I'm at least curious enough to see where he's going to go with this next.
Well, let's take a step back and look at how we sort of got here. And Prometheus was released in 2012, and it made a total worldwide of $403 million, and that's against a $130 million budget. And the domestic gross just barely, it came just short of breaking even with its reported production budget of $126 million. But Prometheus, it was a hit. It was $403 million worldwide. That's a lot of money. That's, you know, just shy of $500 million. So it was an experiment. It was and it in some ways paid off for him because it allowed him, I think, to be successful enough. Ridley Scott, I'm talking about, to be successful enough to say, okay, now we can tell people are interested. Let's start developing this sort of alien prequel mythology. Because Prometheus was a big gamble in that it was an alien prequel, but they did not want to attach the alien franchise to the name of the movie in any way. You wouldn't realize that it was actually related to the alien mythology until you sat down and started the movie. So a gamble in that way, and that they, you know, it's like having a Batman movie, but not calling it Batman, calling it like just something totally obscure,
right.
You know, some people will know is related to Batman, but, to many people might not, register as a Batman movie. So it paid off, I think. So Prometheus was successful, even though a lot of people hate it. A lot of people, it was a big letdown in terms of content. And quickly, Matt, before we move forward into how we got to Alien Covenant, what did you think of Prometheus?
I think I feel kind of similar to this one, where I think there were some interesting concepts in it and some cool visuals and good individual scenes that worked well in it. But as a whole, it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. I thought it had a lot of sort of pseudo-religious, pseudo-intellectual ideas being floated around that didn't really ultimately go anywhere or pay off, which to me, I was willing to kind of write that off as coming from Damon Lindelof, who I know was heavily involved in that movie from a screenplay standpoint. So I still think that seems to be a big part of what he's doing in Covenant, but I think it's a much... I think that stuff is de-emphasized in this movie, and it's more of a background. And I think there's a lot more of the good stuff that I liked in Prometheus is present in Covenant, to me.
Oh, okay.
I think it shifts more to playing up the things that made the original trilogy work. And to some extent, I think you could point to a little bit of stuff from Alien Resurrection, maybe, but not very much. There were moments in this movie where I could point to it and remember Alien and Aliens and Alien 3 that were very, to me, very clear, direct references. But also just, you know, I think the thing that it took most from Prometheus is the character of David, which honestly was the most interesting part of that movie to me. And it does a lot more with David than Prometheus did.
Well, an interesting box office fact about the series is that if you look at the Alien series, including Alien versus Predator, those films, Prometheus is by far the top grossing film domestically of the Alien franchise with 126. None of the Alien films, including Alien Covenant in 2017, have crossed the $100 million mark at the domestic box office. Prometheus did that and some change with 126. And pretty amazing to think that one of the, you know, I would consider to be one of the most highly regarded sci-fi franchises does not have a single entry that has passed $100 million at the domestic box office. So, Matt, I gotta ask you this because I was watching Alien Covenant. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but there's a point in that film in Alien Covenant where a guy shows up in a hood, and it was a really cool moment because I was like, oh, wow, who's this guy? I wasn't even thinking about it. I was just like, wow, this is a surprise. Who sort of saves the crew from an attack by the Neomorphs, which are like the light-skinned xenomorphs. So this guy in a hood shows up, and when we find out who that guy in the hood is and where he takes us and everything, we realize that, nope, this isn't an alien movie. This is, in fact, Prometheus 2. Because at that point, we basically are reminded of everything that happened in Prometheus. We have one of the characters in Prometheus, David, played by Michael Fassbender, and we basically go back and revisit everything that happened in that film. So Alien vs. Covenant, well, yeah, sure, it's an alien movie. There's a xenomorph. It's part of the Alien franchise. It is a direct sequel to Prometheus. You can't argue with that.
No, it definitely is. And narratively, that's where it's picking up. But I think whereas Prometheus, I think, went to a lot of efforts to separate itself and somehow distance itself from the rest of the Alien franchise, despite being part of it, I think this movie very directly drew more from the original movies. I think, and maybe that's Ridley Scott's plan. Maybe as he does more of these, it feels more and more like Alien and Aliens as we get closer, since we're basically talking about a prequel trilogy here. But, you know, to me, there's only one real moment in this movie where if you hadn't seen, well, no, none of it would make sense if you hadn't seen Prometheus, but it doesn't really make that much sense anyway, even if you've seen Prometheus. To me, there's only one moment in this movie where the part of me that didn't like Prometheus had a big eye roll and said, give me a break, I don't care about this stuff. And it's a moment where they show this flashback where David is flying a ship over this big city where these other aliens, and I honestly don't even remember the significance.
The engineers,
of these other aliens.
Matt. The engineers. Don't
the
pretend
engineers.
Like you don't know what they're called.
So he flies this spaceship over the city of the engineers, and he starts just dropping bombs out and killing all of them. I still do not know why he did it or what the significance of that action were. That to me had all of the obtuseness that I hated about Prometheus. But outside of that moment, it didn't really matter, and all you need to know is that David is a psychopath beyond that. He's a bad guy. For some reason, he is obsessed with destruction and death and with furthering evolution of these creatures, of the xenomorphs. And, you know, again, it doesn't really matter why. I think probably what's going on here is you have a case where a filmmaker has some sort of grand statement or philosophical idea he's trying to explore, and that has become way more important to him than narrative or characters. And so you end up having characters do things that aren't really explained or, you know, don't really make a lot of sense in the context of the story. They're doing them because they're trying to fulfill some type of philosophical role. And, you know, I think that would be cool and be worth talking about if the rest of it made sense too. But I don't really care that much about what Ridley Scott's trying to say here or explore about religion or creation or any of that. I really just am here to see the scary alien monster movie. And, you know, I think at that level, it works okay. There's a few really good scenes. I think probably the biggest problem the movie has is that there's too many characters, which is the thing that a lot of monster movies do these days. You know, in Alien, you literally meet every single character that's in that spaceship, so it matters every time one of them dies. And in this movie, you know, there's something like, you know, feels like 20.
15. It's 15, Matt.
And they get picked off one at a time.
Yeah,
and
by really, the end of it, 13 of them die at the end of these characters. 13 out of
really,
15.
And I don't really care about any of them. The only characters that we get to know and actually care anything about are Catherine Waterson and Danny McBride and the
captain,
the guy
Billy Crudup.
Billy Crudup. Yeah, I mean,
captain.
Look, that's basically it. I don't care about any of the other actors or characters in this movie. They're not fleshed out. They're there clearly to get picked off one at a time. They have Damian Bashir is in this movie, and there is absolutely no character development for him. He is very clearly there.
Well, no, he is apparently revealed that he's gay, right?
Sure, one of the other guys, I guess, is his husband, right?
Yeah, which is revealed after he dies. I thought that was interesting. Just like to throw that in there. I'm gonna have to go back and watch to see if that was suggested previously in the movie. It's like all of a sudden as he's dying, Damian Bashir is like, "I love you," and they show a wedding ring. I don't know. It's kind of out of nowhere. Let's back up, man. I want to start at the beginning with this, and you know, we open the movie in this beautiful modern Stark, not to be confused with Ben Stark, like mansion that's in this mountain range, and you've got Peter Whalen, played by Guy Pearce, with David, I guess, when David has just been born. And that's when we sort of establish the fact that, you know, we see the birth of David, we see what he's capable of, how smart he is, but we see that he has daddy issues because, and this is sort of the origin of what makes him eventually mean and crazy, is that Peter Whalen, like, tells him to give him his tea. And that's sort of like, okay. And that was the only thing that I could really see is what really upset him. But that set off a chain of events that led to him being this psychopathic android.
I didn't interpret the getting the tea part necessarily.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I just took it more like he made something that was smart enough to question its own existence and its creation, and that inevitably leads to destructive tendencies.
Yes, but when Peter Whalen says, "Give me my tea," David looks at him with this, like, you know, disdain, like, "I'm your servant. I've been cringed.
Right, why should I serve you when I'm superior to you?" Yeah.
Yeah. So in that moment, I feel like that's where he realizes, you know, what his sort of lot in life is. And then we cut ahead, and honestly, to 2104, and I'm reading from the Wikipedia plot summary here. The colonization ship Covenant is bound for a remote planet, Origae 6, with 2,000 colonists on board asleep and, like, cryosleep, and 1,000 embryos, I'm assuming human embryos, on board. And the ship is monitored by Walter, also played by Michael Fassbender. And I got to admit, I thought that Walter was David, but just pretending to be somebody else. I thought this the whole time, and maybe I'm stupid, but I did not think, that's just another Weyland-Yutani android.
The only real cues you would have, I guess, is that if you remember Prometheus and you were watching at the end of it, then you remember that David is not, you know, coming from Earth. He's off doing his own thing at this point. And I look as the details move on that, and you start to see, like, sort of where Walter came from, they clearly made him, you know, I think, again, there's so much effort done to make this work at a metaphorical level that I wish he'd done to make it work just at a basic story level. But Walter, to me, is so clearly, you know, they needed to make a version 2 because David didn't go well. He creeped people out. He was too smart. He questioned. So they made a blue collar man, you know, with a sort of American accent. He doesn't really question what he's doing or what his purpose is. And, you know, he just takes his orders and does what he's told.
He sounds like he's doing an impression of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Snowden.
I couldn't put my finger on the accent exactly, but I really do like it.
All right.
Go ahead.
So very similar to what happens in the movie Passengers, the ship detects a neutrino burst and is damaged. Some of the crew is all woken up, but not the people that are in, not the colonists, only the crew is woken up. And the captain is killed in this violent death where he's burned to death, and everybody wakes up and sort of is forced to kind of take it from there. And this is where we start, this is where we meet the 15 cast members. and it's interesting that they went this direction. Look, I mean, there hasn't been a legit Alien movie since 1997, man, 20 years with Alien Resurrection. And so with this one, they did not assign like a star, a Sigourney Weaver. It's obviously it's a prequel, but they wanted to make it like a full ensemble, which was a risk. And I think that might be part of the reason it didn't do very well, because you know, it didn't have like The Rock and the hot chick that everybody knows, and et cetera, Paul Giamatti, et cetera. Like they went the route.
You're going to talk about Catherine Waterston like that?
Yes, I am. She's cool. She's got a cool look. You know, I think she's certainly great in this role for what it is, but she's not a name. She doesn't draw money. And nobody, you know, mainstream people that go see big science fiction movies don't know who she is. So she's an unknown as far as regular people in America go. The only known person in this movie is Danny McBride.
Well, Fassbender.
And Fassbender, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So you're dealing with a lot of unknowns here. And then, you know, you go past Catherine Waterston. There are a lot of people that have bodies of work and they're working successful actors, but they aren't like known quantities. It's like they didn't even get like somebody that Game of Thrones fans would know. You know what I mean?
They're red shirt.
Totally. But they're all solid actors. But anyway, it's interesting. And talking to Ben Flanagan, you know, he has said from the beginning, like, who the hell are all are these people? How am I going to know who they are? And he's got a great point. But what I told him today when I gave him my spoiler-free recap was most of them get killed so fast that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, this is a problem that came up. I don't know if anybody else of the Film Nerds crew saw King Kong. I think I might be the only one. But it was a very similar problem for me, that they give you such a massive ensemble. And as everybody starts getting killed off one at a time, you just don't care, because you don't even know who any of them are. So it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any impact. I mean,
having seen five Alien movies up to this point, you know that that's how these movies work.
Right. And I mean, going back, when you think about the first one, right, when John Hurt was already a pretty big name when Alien came out. He wasn't,
sure.
I don't know if he had his sort of Oscar level run yet, but he was a big name. And when you have him at a certain point in the movie, I mean, they've well established that character and who he is, and then his guts explode on camera. It made a big impact and it was shocking. And every character that gets killed off is shocking because of how much time we've spent with them. And to me, I think this is becoming kind of a trend with these monster movies, is they don't want to cast a big name person and then kill them off halfway through the movie. You pretty much know who's based on payroll, who's going to make it to the end of the movie.
Yeah. And that's true in terms of this movie for sure. Based on who survives or who makes it the longest. Well, so they all get woken up and they're trying to get to this other planet, but that's like 7 years away. And they get this transmission, which is the sound of this somebody singing a John Denver song, and they see that it's only like a very short distance away from this planet that they somehow missed. And they end up going to that planet, and it turns out that that's the planet. They get there, and they land, and it seems very Earth-like. But then quickly, two of the crew members are exposed to these deadly spores that are airborne that implant aliens in them, and instead of coming out of their stomachs like in previous movies, the aliens come out of their backs and their mouths, and then it sort of, that's when the movie gets kind of kicks into gear, where it's like, now we have creatures, and when the crew is under attack by these aliens that grow very fast just like the xenomorphs, David saves them. David is wearing a hood, and he comes and shoots a flare and takes them all back to his lair. That's when it becomes Prometheus 2, and that's when we find out that David eventually has been breeding these aliens, and he essentially has created the xenomorph that we now know, which is sort of the big reveal of this movie, which is that an angry, disgruntled android created by Weyland, Weyland-Yutani, who has daddy issues because his daddy told him to get him tea in a mean way, has created, crossbred and created and engineered this super killing machine called the Xenomorph that we end up seeing in the later films. Does that mean, is that your sort of takeaway here? Matt, you there?
Hang on, you cut out for a second. Cue me back up.
Okay, so we find out that David has the angry android with daddy issues has
right.
come up. He has crossbred and engineered the Xenomorphs, which we see later in the you know the alien movies that we have known and loved for years. But that's where these came from, and that's the big takeaway from this
right.
movie is that that's where the Xenomorphs came from. Is that they weren't Xenomorphs the whole time, but David bred them to be what they are as we see them in Alien 1 and Aliens and Alien 3, et cetera.
And so I guess, and look, that's probably what this whole new series of movies in this franchise are going to be ultimately about. And I'll ask the same question that I would ask about the Star Wars prequels and a lot of other failed prequel series. Which is, did that change anything at all about how you feel about those original Alien movies?
For me, this movie sadly skirted the issue that fascinates me the most about the Alien franchise, which is the Weyland-Yutani Corp, the company, as they refer to it in the film. And
yeah.
I want a movie that is like based in the home office of Weyland-Yutani. Where they are getting these transmissions, and why in Alien did Weyland-Yutani want the ship to come home with the organism preserved, with nobody on board? And you know, you gotta hope that there's gonna be at least one, if not two more movies, that will come before it like hands it over Rogue One style to Alien.
Yeah.
Where we will get a little more Weyland-Yutani action, because that is, to me, the most fascinating thing. And the only two movies, really, that successfully deal with this aspect of the story are Alien and Aliens, where we, you know, in Aliens, we see, like, she comes back and deals with corporate representatives from Weyland-Yutani and, you know, like Paul Reiser, and it's just, you see...
Right.
You see that corporate culture, and that is my favorite aspect of this, is that there's this evil corporation behind all this that disregards human life. And in this, we hear about the company a couple of times. We obviously see Weyland at the beginning, but it sort of still skirts that issue, and to me still plays, you know, David now is in control. He's got a ship. Let's go back for a second. So, basically, the crew is able to get off of the planet and leave. And at the end, they fight off the Xenomorph and get into space. They blow the Xenomorph into space. And the only two crew members that are left are Kenny Powers and Inherent Vice Girl. And along with Shame. Shame puts them both into hypersleep, but then she realizes that it's not Walter who she thought it was David, which is not a surprise to anybody in the crowd. Like, there's a lots of different things.
But I will say this. I thought it was a fun, dark twist on the end of the first Alien movie. And Ridley Scott, I think, in general, is a lot more pessimistic and dark now as a filmmaker than he used to be. But I'm with you. Look, this prequel trilogy seems to be about basically a robot who is on some kind of weird, evil, religious quest. And that doesn't interest me as much as the sort of the original premise, which is, I guess, in some ways similar to Jurassic Park, in some ways similar to kind of RoboCop, where it's about, you know, the disregard for life and how that will come back to bite you, and life cannot be tamed, ultimately. And, you know, people kind of messing with things they don't understand. I think those themes were a lot more effective. That's not what he's trying to make now. He's using the monsters that he already put in another movie to tell a completely different kind of story about different themes entirely. I don't really find these new themes as interesting. That said, the two scenes where we get David and Walter together, I found to be completely, like, I couldn't turn away. Like, it was incredible.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
The flute. Let's talk about the flute scene. Let's talk about the flute.
The flute where he's, let me show you some fingering. I think that at some point when they were making these scenes, Ridley Scott or Michael Fassbender must have figured out, like, there's no way to do this without it being kind of campy. And he just leaned into it. Like, it is absolutely weird and uncomfortable and obviously supposed to be sort of homoerotic. And they just fully leaned into it and went campy with it. But it really works and is very creepy. And both performances from Fassbender are really good in those two scenes.
Oh, yeah. They're incredible. And to think that it's the same actor in both roles, it's really, it was a feat. They nailed
I've
it.
I've never seen, I don't want to speak like authoritatively about this, but that might be the first time we've ever seen an actor have a gay on-screen kiss with himself or herself. I don't know if that's true for sure.
Pretty cool. And you know, stuff like that, that scene, you know, that's a really awesome, original, fun scene. And, I like this movie, you know, cause it's got its feet in both the Prometheus and that saga mythology that it created a few years ago and in the Alien side. It's like, it's even enough to where, to me, this was a positive experience to me. And I thought that the movie was beautiful. Like, I loved all of the cinematography was great and the design. I loved the ship design. It definitely felt like Alien, like we were back in that era. And so it's in the plus column for me, even though there's a lot of messiness in this, but definitely not as much as Prometheus. And I had fun in this movie.
I feel the same way. I think that Fassbender's carrying an awful lot of the weight of it. And he does it really well. I mean, I think without that performance, this movie would be a lot less enjoyable, but he really nails it. And he's just sort of, I mean, he's commanding the movie whenever he's on screen in either part for me. And, I think Catherine Waterston's good. She's to me developed into a very likable, sympathetic female lead and she's in multiple big franchises where she's had an opportunity to do that. Danny McBride did a really good job. It's a pretty straightforward part, but
yeah.
I think it shows that he can do non-comedic roles and do a good job with them. He has one pretty dramatic scene and he handles it pretty well. Billy Crudup is just a little shit in this movie and gets what's coming to him. So it's not really too much to say about it other than I think he did his job pretty well.
Yeah, totally. I did not know that James Franco was involved in this. I missed him in the trailer or forgot.
Good reveal.
But I will say this, that I recently saw, and I'm a James Franco fan for sure.
Yeah.
I recently saw, Why Him on a plane. And,
yeah.
and, you know, his character was so annoying in that and not likable at all that I'm kind of like down on Franco right now, even though
well,
the other day.
Well, that's kind of his thing now, isn't it? Like, that's basically what he did in This Is the End, too. He was obnoxious. And
yeah, but like, I went back and watched the scenes from the interview the other day.
He's annoying in that, too.
Well, okay, Katy Perry's new album came out, and that reminded me of the scene having to do with Katy Perry.
Yeah.
And I went back and watched that, and I loved it. And Franco, I watched the scene with him and Kim Jong-un in the tank. And I love Franco in that. And I love him in that movie overall. Like, I love
him. It's great, yeah.
But in Why Him, he is so annoying. Like, you want him, I just rooted for him to lose. I just did not like him at all in the movie. And there was still, even at the end, there was nothing redeeming about him. And that's why I kind of am down on that movie, because even at the end, There was nothing about his character that truly redeemed him. And so I'm sort of down on him, and he was sort of in this movie acting like he did, and why him, like with his big giant grin. And I was like, ah, dude, like to coin a line from Batman, I'm glad you're dead. Tim Burton, Batman. But so that was interesting. Cool cameo. And, you know, I'm kind of glad that I went into this movie not knowing everything, like not knowing that was David in the Hood. And I like where it went, and I love, you know, the idea of scenes with, you know, Ridley Scott doing a scene with two androids talking to each other, or synthetics talking to each other, and everything that's at stake
there. Consistently, yeah, those are pretty consistently the best characters in any Alien movies, and I think I'm glad that he realizes that and emphasized it in this one, and I hope that wherever he goes next, that it's continuing to play up Fassbender and that whole aspect of things more and more.
Help me out here, Matt. Like, apparently this is the beginning of a trilogy, right? There's going to be this and two more movies.
I have heard him say that he's going to make two more. Are we really going to pretend like Prometheus isn't a part of this?
No. I've heard that. Yeah, absolutely. Like, this is Alien Covenant is Prometheus 2. It should be called Prometheus 2 : Alien Covenant.
Yeah, it's definitely part two of a new trilogy to me, or whatever, however long he wants to make this thing.
Well, apparently, I think that Prometheus stands on its own, and then now we're going to have, like, three movies with Alien in the title.
Yeah. Or they could just go back and back change the title to make it Alien Prometheus. Which is really what they should do.
Prometheus. Oh God. Okay. So where we're at now is, and I'd hoped to get a little bit closer to, apparently we're 18 years prior to Alien. So now it's like we have to find out, we have to get to, in order for there to be a Rogue One-esque handoff to Alien, which we need at this point. We're going to have to figure out how that ship landed on, whatever it is, LV-426, and how the Nostromo ended up going there. We're going to have that, like, clean handoff. So we're two movies away. Like, what do you think is the next move based on what you've seen here? I mean, where you have, so the movie ends with David placing two facehugger embryos in cold storage and continuing the ship's journey into the galaxy. I mean, you have to think that at some point he's going to take those facehuggers to that planet that Sigourney Weaver and crew encounter.
Sure, and probably breed them with all the bodies he's got on board, which is apparently what he was doing with Noomi Rapace from the last movie.
Well, poor Noomi.
But, yeah, I mean...
She was jacked up, man. God.
She got it pretty rough for an alien heroine. But I think that probably, I don't know how he's going to stretch this for two more movies, honestly. I feel like one more and we ought to probably be there. But
I agree. One more. We can get there in one more movie.
Getting David involved in both of them was cool. I like that he sort of set up two completely separate crews of people. But one of the cool things about the original franchise was we had a heroine and, you know, somebody to root for. And that's what made an action movie possible in that franchise and a horror movie possible. And, you know, there isn't a hero in this new part of the franchise. There's only a villain. And that's kind of the inherent problem with a prequel, you know, is the villain has to win in these movies. And I thought that at the end of this movie, you know, it kind of sucks that they put you through all of that with Catherine Waterston's character, and she finally fights her way through, and she uses her resourcefulness and her smart, but she has to die at the end. There's no other way to do it because it's a prequel, and the bad guy has to survive. So it's kind of the inherent issue of making a prequel trilogy.
Inherent vice.
The inherent vice of it. Yeah.
That was perfect.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I think that I hope that there is another movie, at least one more, because I want to, I am a fan of this series. And I just want to, I want to see where it goes. I want to see the bridge. And I think they made it work with Rogue One, and obviously it can happen, and you can have like a seamless handoff. And I think that we're going to, hopefully we can get that with Ridley, if he sticks around.
Well, I'd still, for the record, I'd still really like to see the movie that, gosh, I'm blanking on his
name.
Yeah, that Neil Blomkamp wanted to make, which was an Ellen Ripley movie that essentially disregarded everything that happened after Aliens and kind of hit a reset button where a lot of the characters that got killed off are back, and we're just going to take it in a different direction. And I think Ridley Scott got really offended by that for some reason, and you know, didn't like that the franchise was sort of being downgraded in that kind of way. But to me, that's you know, the reason that people love those movies, but particularly Aliens, I think, more so than even the first one, is because Sigourney Weaver created a great character that was really likable and was a great badass action hero. And I think it's weird that he's fixated on the monster and thinks that that's really the star of these movies. And I think if you ask a lot of people to love the movies, it's probably, they would say that Ripley is probably a lot more of why they like those movies than just the alien itself. So I still love to see a Blomkamp Ripley movie or somebody else take a crack at it. I think Blomkamp has kind of moved on at this point because he got shut down, but that's a direction I would like to see this go at some point. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen as long as Ridley Scott is still making these movies.
Yeah, obviously you'd want to see Blomkamp do his thing, and I think that obviously he struggled at the box office with his last two movies, with Elysium and Chappie, and I don't think he has a lot of clout in Hollywood right now. I think he probably just needs to take another job as a journeyman and crush it and do something that makes a ton of money before he can get the license to take over a big franchise or something like that. Because he commands big budgets, and I think that's just where it is with him. And now he's doing he's starting a production company called Oats or something like that. And hopefully
he's making big budget short films right now, which I think is probably a way for him to get back on Hollywood radar.
But and as you know, I mean, I love Neil Blomkamp. Chappie was my favorite movie of 2015. And you know, I mean, if I were him, I'd be like, okay, Ridley Scott wants to finish out his sort, you know, and like bring it all full circle. Let him do it, and I'll go do my thing, and then come back and revisit it. But I mean, really, it's still pretty cool that Ridley Scott came back and made another Alien movie. I think it was solid. I mean, obviously you could say he made two with Prometheus, but Prometheus is not an alien movie. It's just, it's its own thing that then
the
dips
David
its toe.
Movie.
Yeah. And it dips its toe in the Alien franchise, and, you know, it is what it is. But I would just say let Ridley Scott, you know, wait until you have his blessing, because I think you want Ridley Scott's blessing. And,
yeah.
If you're going to do an alien movie. So,
well, That's my takeaway from these, Graham, so far from this. The way I feel about this franchise right now is I think David is a cool character, and I'm willing to watch more movies and see what he's up to. I think it's hard for me to connect it too heavily with the Alien movies that I know, but I like David as a character. I think he's interesting, and I'm willing to watch more movies about him.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Right now, there is no official green light for another Alien movie. No production has been announced. All we've heard is talk that Ridley Scott wants to continue it, and apparently there are stories and screenplays that have been written. But Ridley Scott's doing another movie right now called All the Money in the World. And then he has something else lined up called Battle of Britain that's lined up with no cast. So maybe another Alien movie will jump ahead of that. But we'll just have to wait and see. I think that definitely does not help that this movie did not do that great. But when you look at it compared to other Alien movies in the franchise, it did about as well as all the other ones did in North America. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I hope that sooner rather than later we can keep the story going and make the handoff so that then other filmmakers like Neil Blomkamp can continue. But I liked it. I put it in the plus column. I would watch it again. It is gruesomely violent, man, like grotesque Definitely. Violence in this. The gore is – I mean, there were some jaw-dropping moments for me. So Ridley's crazy, dude.
It's squishy violent. It's gross.
It's awful. Yeah. Gruesome, grotesque stuff, man. Ridley's, he's nuts. it's definitely not a good year, you know what I mean? Not a good year, Ridley. But, Matt, enjoyed talking to you about this, man. I'm glad that we both saw it and could chat about it. And, you know, I think I still have yet to go back and sit down and watch Prometheus, even though I've read its Wikipedia plot description. But I might go back and look at it again after seeing this. But I'm glad you talked to me about it, man. Enjoyed it.
Yes. Thank you, Graham.
Well, thank you. Oh, wait, that's Nicolas Cage from The Rock.
Yeah.
I'm Stanley Goodspeed. I know how to disarm the VX gas missiles.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.